Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. What condition my condition was in?
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Owl. Rick Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 94. Up, wow. This week, not much in the up. Everything's been red. Today, I got some green in here. It's like hurting the eyes, Greg. It's hurting the eyes. It was all red yesterday. Yesterday was brutal. Less than, so was Friday. We've had a little bit of a turn at the end of the year here, but today looks like we're trying to bounce back a little. Speaking of bouncing back, do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do, you do.
How are you, bud? Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. You know, we've got, I think, a couple of things that we ought to spend my brief time with you today on.
Well, good idea, because yesterday we were talking about deaths all the time.
Well, you know, I wrote a piece on Carter's passing, as you know, as I've commented on your show many times, one of the most curious components of his life and his presidency, in fact, so directly on point to, you know, the time that he spent in the Oval Office, is that nowhere in his library, in the public side anyway, I mean, I'm sure in papers, if you know, if you apply for and get access to the private stuff, you can find it. Nowhere on the public side is a single mention of his executive order that screwed the American nuclear industry.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned that yesterday. I mean, that was probably one of his biggest mistakes. Why do you suppose I was going to ask?
Well, he was wrong twice. By the way,
but I'm going to ask. Well, I'm asking you, but I'm also going to ask because Hal had somewhat of a similar career. You know, Hal was an engineer on a nuclear cruiser. Why did he feel that way? Why did he think the breeder reactor and stuff wouldn't work? I mean, was he?
Oh no! It wasn't that it wouldn't work. That was not the root of his objection. We already knew it worked because we already had operating ones when he issued that order. He knew it would work.
Well, the big honking one was supposed to go where? In Tennessee or Kentucky or someplace?
Well, so it's not a big one big honking one. It's that you need several. In order to have a viable reprocessing system for fuel. And the basic problem...
Start from the beginning, because I have a feeling some listeners don't even know what this means, because I heard about this thing when I was in high school, physics, for God's sake.
Right, this is... this was the original design of the civilian nuclear program in the United States, and it was connected to the military nuclear program because, of course, we and Russia were both trying to figure out how many bombs we had to make to blow the other people to the, you know, the orbit of Mars. And so cross-pollination, or if you will, cross-cost accounting is of course always part of that game, right?
Oh yeah.
Right. And I mean, that was a big part of the reason. That was the fundamental reason that we used the civilian nuclear cycle that we use today rather than doing something intelligent like using the thorium and liquid salt cycle that we figured out. We also figured out how to make work, and we actually had working at Oak Ridge. But essentially the bottom line is that when you do nuclear fission, no matter how you do it, for civilian power purposes, or for that matter, for military power purposes, you generate a tremendous amount of very high-level nuclear waste. And the heavier the element is in general, there are some exceptions, but in general, the heavier the element is, the more dangerous it is, the longer it stays dangerous. And the absolute worst of the worst are in this series that do not occur naturally. They're called actinide elements. But they're created whenever you do nuclear fission. And so these elements are extremely radioactive, and they're in many cases are dangerous for 100,000 years. Okay, so that's just how long it takes for them to decay. The safest place for them is inside a reactor, because everything else that's going on in there is equally dangerous. And so you can't make the situation worse. And therefore, the sane thing to do is to take your used fuel, separate out that stuff, put it back into a new fuel pin as part of the inert filler, because in a civilian reactor, only about 5% of the fuel is active. And you do that on purpose, because if there is an accident, you do not want any possibility of that fuel remaining critical. So without the moderator that controls the reaction, if you have fuel that goes in a typical civilian reactor, the reaction goes out. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to have a huge mess. You will, okay, aka Fukushima. However, what you won't have is a runaway reaction that keeps going and you can't stop. Okay, that's bad.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, that's very bad. So you want to design so that won't happen, okay? And one of the ways you do it is by limiting the concentration of the fissile material in the fuel. And by doing that, if the moderator goes away for some reason, which in most civilian power reactors is water, the reaction stops and you still have the mess because of the decay heat and everything else. But what you don't have is an uncontrolled chain reaction that there's nothing you can do about. The exception to this is in small reactors or those intended to breed fuel, both of which have to run a much more highly enriched fuel mix. And so your military power reactor, the power reactor in an aircraft carrier, because of the size constraints, it really comes down to how big can this thing be and how much can it mass. And in a ship or a submarine, you've got problems with space and you've got problems with, you know, how much room you can consume, right? So in those reactors, they use highly enriched fuel. And those are, if something goes wrong, those are very dangerous, because, of course, if it's a submarine and it sinks to the bottom of the Marianas Trench, well, you know, that there's an uncontrolled reaction. Well, that's you know, that's sad, but it's probably not going to harm anybody. But the breeder reactors that are an inherent part of this are, for the most part, they run using liquid sodium as a coolant, because sodium is quite transparent to neutrons, and they use a small compact core. So they're considered fast reactors. They don't need a moderator. Fermi 1 in Monroe was one of these. Manju reactor in Japan was another. And that design was fairly well understood. It has risks. And one of the big ones is that sodium, if it manages to come into contact with air, will burn instantly, because it is extremely reactive, and the water vapor that is in the air, water and sodium immediately combust. So if you have a leak, you've got a problem. But that is not supposed, that's, you know, it's a chemical fire, basically. And it's extremely difficult to extinguish, because, you know, it feeds on the water, so you can't use water to put it out. The other problem with that is that if one of those runs away and gets away from you, you've really got trouble. Okay, so Carter believed that although we were able to safely operate these plants in the military realm, so, you know, on board an aircraft carrier or a submarine, that we couldn't do it in the civilian realm. That we were just, we as people are just too screwed in the head to not cut corners.
Is there any reason why? Because they were building stuff that would, Was there any reason why he felt that way? Was there an accident or something he was
close to? There's been a chief. There's been a series of things that have gone wrong during the development of nuclear power. Okay, I mean, you don't hear about a lot of discussion about the bad stuff that's happened. There was a plant that blew up in Chalk River. Canada's had a couple of incidents. There's been a lot of close calls. Okay, I mean, Three Mile Island was a close call.
There was a an article in the Notre Dame magazine. God, Carl, it had to be about Jimmy Carter's time, actually. And I've been trying to find it. I can't find it. But it had to do with a long list of all the people that died in the development of nuclear energy, including all the people that were on the set of that one movie, John Wayne movie, where the thing blew the thing off, like, what, 5 miles away? And all the people were, like, right there. They never even told them to move. And there were all kinds of people that have not made it, you know, that were victims of the development of this stuff.
Well, there's two sides of it. There's people not paying attention in a reasonable sort of way. There's the collateral damage from intentional nuclear detonations, you know, when we were doing weapons testing and things like this, right?
Yeah.
There's the collateral damage there, but that's not quite the same thing as, you know, oops, I pushed the wrong button, you know, the Homer Simpson thing,
yeah.
Right?
But the bottom line on this feeder thing, because we're kind of going along on this, is the stuff that's sitting in Zion and these other places in these pools, like, forever. You're supposed to be able to put that stuff very tightly contained on a railroad car, ship it to this place, and basically come out with new fuel, correct?
Correct. And the reason this is the only sane thing to do is that over time, you're radiating that stuff inside the reactor and basically bombarding it with neutrons. It degrades into stuff that is dangerous for much shorter period of time. So the entire reason you do this is not just to extract the plutonium, which is a useful fuel. It's also that by putting the bad crap back into the reactor, you burn it up. Literally, you burn it up. And so the end process of this is stuff that's dangerous for a couple hundred years, and we could probably reasonably figure out how to contain something for that long. Okay, the idea that we could do it for 100,000 years and that our government will be stable, and that's just fantasy land.
Oh, wait a minute, on Star Trek, they loaded it up on a barge and shoved it into the sun.
Well, that's a nice idea until you launch one of those things and something goes wrong with it and it blows up.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I mean, there's, I mean, at the point that we master with 100% accuracy the ability to get stuff off this rock without anything ever going wrong, there are options, okay? But, you know, but today we don't have those.
Where's Scotty? So, you can just beam it up there.
Well, there you go. But I mean, that's the... You know, that's the thing, is that Carter did not believe that we could do this as civilians and not screw it up, and that if we screwed it up, we'd make a city glow in the dark. Well, as it turns out, he was wrong about that, at least so far, right? But the other thing he was wrong about was that if he signed this EO, that the buildup of the waste material, as soon as people realized that was the only other alternative, it was the only thing that was going to happen, was that there would be people within our government and our civilian side that would force all these plants to close. He literally tried to destroy the civilian nuclear energy infrastructure
purpose. I find it so surprising because the guy was pretty forward-looking in just about everything. But everybody has a Achilles heel, huh?
Well, this was, the thing is that if you're now going to, you know, try to claim that we need so-called clean energy, okay, in about a week you're going to find out why that's a really stupid idea, because it's going to be well below zero in a decent part of the United States overnight. If you're an adherent to that particular religious cult, then the only sane thing that you can support in terms of something that works all the time, no matter how hot or how cold it is, it's nuclear power. And that's, I mean, that's just the way it is. So taking that off the table was it was a decision he made. And then the thing is, Reagan, and this, really the illustration on this is much greater than just in the context of nuclear power. Reagan reversed that EO on his first day in office. okay, which is one of the realities of executive orders, is that they create no due process rights. They are instantly reversible by the next administration. So if you happen to be a beneficiary of one of them, i.e. the Dreamers, there is absolutely zero legal argument you can raise if the next guy comes along and says, oh, I'm tearing that thing up. You have nowhere to go.
Even though Reagan reversed it, they never got started. So,
well, that's right. Well, that's the point, Chief, is that even though the administration can reverse it, what you can't do is force a business.
I will bet you that, you know, how are you going to know the guy's dead? I would bet you that there were all kinds of amazing near misses on the military side that he felt only people with an amazing amount of training somewhat saved, and he couldn't count on that. So there had to be some reason, because the guy was pretty forward-looking otherwise.
Oh, there were like I said, there were several, not near misses, there were a handful of kabooms during the development of nuclear power. And most people don't know that, but there were, I mean, the planet Chalk River blew up. It impaled a guy on the ceiling. Well, they screwed. I mean, it was human error. It wasn't, you know, it was people doing stupid things, but there were several of those kinds of incidents due to people doing stupid things. And Carter was convinced that eventually we would do something stupid enough that one of our cities would get, you know, would get incinerated. Well, maybe not incinerated, but, you know, poisoned for the next 100,000 years.
Well, you know, I was reading a couple of his interesting quotes last night after he got out of, you know, after he was out of office, and you know, times are somehow, you know, the electorate, it's like people with the death penalty, you know. Yeah, well, let's roast them all. Are you going to be the one to pull the trigger? Well, not me. You know, it's
you guys know how many broken arrows there have been since 1950?
Broken arrows.
That's a lost nuclear device.
You ever seen the movie with John Travolta?
Oh, yeah. I've not seen it, no.
So there's been 32 that we know about broken arrows or scenarios.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and there's actually...
And we've lost six bombs.
Yep, and one of them off the coast, I think it was South Carolina or North Carolina. As far as I know, it has not been found.
Right.
Carol, doesn't the...
Yeah, there's six that are still lost.
Doesn't the, right. the device, the thing they use to blow it up, what's the in that part of the bomb where you...
Well, there's a pit that's in the center of a thermonuclear weapon. Yeah, it's not in the older gun style crude ones, but in a modern hydrogen, you know, thermonuclear bomb. Yes, there's.
But I mean, if that part decays, it'll never blow, right?
Well, it'll explode, but the secondary won't go off, which is the really bad one,
right?
Right. I mean, the original. The original charge, you know, I mean, there's a chemical explosive that compresses everything together, and then in the center of all of this is a thing called a pit, and those require maintenance. They have to be taken out and renewed every now and then.
What was the Clancy book about? Somebody found...
Oh, another fun fact. You guys know that WD-40 was invented for ICBMs?
Yep.
How about that?
That's interesting.
They didn't want their ICBMs exposed to moisture, like so.
Well, what was the Tom Clancy book where they found the nuke in some plane, some British plane, and it took, I don't know how long to get the... They had to essentially make a whole new bomb because the inside was all corroded and stuff, but they were able to do it, blew it up at Denver Stadium or something. Was that the book?
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's... The thing is that it's... There are a series of safeguards that are in the system, you know, and in the way these things are built to prevent them from being set off by, you know, somebody that just decides to get a wild hair up their butt and manages to get their hands on one. With that said, that which has been built by humans can be, you know, hacked and overridden by humans.
Well, so, one of the quote I thought was interesting is, I think we've seen an election, without getting into the politics of it, some people have they've moved themselves into the lower reaches of humanity, went to the id versus the ego, if I was a Freudian.
Yeah.
And one of his comments was, I could have easily been reelected if I would have just bomb the hell out of Iran, I could have wiped the place off the face of the earth. I didn't think it was the right thing to do. But a lot of people would, have cheered it. He goes, I wasn't going to go for that.
Yeah, well, that was, I mean, you know, and there was also a serious cluster that occurred with the junked attempt to rescue the hostages, which was just about everything that could go wrong with that from a standpoint of hubris and arrogance within the ranks of our various military branches and everything else. Pretty much all everything that you know, somebody trying to swing their you know what around could screw up, got screwed up. And it was the first time since the Vietnam War that our military branches had actually attempted to engage in some kind of offensive act.
Right? Well, we had no SEAL Team 6. We had no coordinated stuff like we do now.
That's right. We had no coordination between the branches. Everybody wanted their fingers in the pie, and the equipment was poorly maintained. And then on top of that, which didn't help at all, they ran into a sandstorm.
Well, I was reading about this the other night when I heard he died, and wanted some current information for the listeners yesterday. And I knew those helicopters were Sikorsky's because my guys at Pullman were in the some of them had worked for Bell.
Right.
And they said that the thing had no business on that raid. Well, I think it was on the raid because it was able to be air refueled, right?
Right. But right. There was, like I said, nobody really, nobody talked to each other at the time. There was no coordination.
Well, you know what the original design of that helicopter was and why it needed the air refueling? It was designed for setting and minesweeping in the ocean.
Well, there you go. That makes sense.
And then they sent it over a desert. They knew the thing had horrible rotors.
Well, and on top of that, eating a bunch of sand into a turbine is
not good.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
But Kyle, I don't know I think our guys are lined up here, so we'll talk to you to Friday. Which we'll do our full New Year thing on Friday. What do you make of this? We're seeing a little bit of movement in oil. We're seeing a big move in natural gas with this cold spell coming.
Yeah.
I've heard two things. Everybody's still convinced. Well, it's going to be $100, $150. Wait till that all happens. Then I read something last week. The amount of oil being produced in the world 10 years from now, the price of oil is going to be lower. So I don't know how whatever your position is, you can sure find stuff to back it up, can't you?
Well, oil, oil is a funny thing because it has a decent lead time, right, from when you decide to sink a hole in the ground until something comes out that's worth it. And you have to spend the money whether you get the something or not. So, but the cyclicality of oil production and oil prices is a very well understood phenomenon for anybody that has paid
attention.
For about
50 years, 60 years, 70 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on like forever, right?
Yeah.
So, is that likely to change anytime soon? No. Is there a problem looming in the next week or two with prices? From an electrical perspective, and possibly with brownouts or even blackouts due to curtailment as a result of the idiocy that we've engaged in over the last decade or so with regards to so-called climate. Yeah, there is. And interestingly enough, just in the last week or so, there's been a fairly considerable move up in energy prices at the at the retail level that you don't necessarily see yet, but you will in your electric bill. The actual generation charge is going to it's about 10% already, and that's a big move in a short period of time. Okay, and it's in advance of this, and the reason is that being that
gas was up 15% yesterday.
Well, yeah, what do you think? I mean, if you're not going to use coal, which always works, and you're not going to use nuclear because you're scared of the radiation boogeyman coming out and biting everybody, then natural gas is all that's left at 3 o'clock in the morning when it's 20 below zero.
Well, they still have a few oil
and there's
reactors.
No wind.
They still have a few oil reactors, don't they?
Well, yeah, there's some, but the thing, I mean, you look at the insanity in New York. New York is the only state that actually built and fueled one and then never gave it an operating license.
That's special.
Oh yeah, I mean all the money spent and no return. What'd that do to your rates?
Well, it doesn't matter. They just add them to the rates. They don't care.
Well, see, but this is Chief, when you get down to it, you know, we'll talk some more about this on Friday because I know I'm out of time here. But if you look at all the things that are screwed up in this country, whether it's H1s, whether it's medicine, when there was just a story out that that United Health has been bribing doctors to go through a Medicare decision tree thing that leads to them getting more money. By the way, that's a kickback. That's illegal under, that's a felony under federal law because it has to do with federal contracting.
We don't do felonies for the right people.
Well, nobody goes to, the problem is nobody goes to jail, right? The H-1B thing, the concept might have been okay, but the felonies there are so long that, I mean, you could probably charge 25,000 people tomorrow and throw them all in prison.
You would have to be somebody, you know, maybe like a Carter to say, look, we all know it's been going on forever. I'm giving you 3 months to knock it off. I mean, it's like, you know. It's like people with the darkened windows in Chicago. Half the city's got them. Guys,
well, I know.
Pull them
but
back.
But Chief, here's the thing. We either stop this or all of the things that we think are wonderful about the United States and our economy are all going to go in the toilet because all that money's being stolen.
Without a doubt. Well, but I think we have Joel. We're going to go to break. If somehow we don't have him, I know you're around. SP Futures up 20. Yeah. Are we going to be a real rally today or are we gonna, this going to fold?
I don't know. This is, you know, this doesn't look like a very large rally. But, no, all right, 100 points of the Dow is 100 points of the Dow, right? And 20 handles on the screws. Yeah, okay.
Well, we actually did our rolls yesterday, so once you go back up, we're going to look like geniuses. So maybe it'll be our day. Who knows? SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 93. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom, Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 21. NASDAQ Futures up 94. We're going to try and rally the last day of the year after two clunkers in a row. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 75. They've been doing well since we've been going down, but now today, not so much. Now it's 0.4%. Well, FTSE up 54.7%. CAC around up 52.7%. So, I'm sorry. The DAX is not trading today. They're closed. The other guys are open. Why would the DAX be closed, Greg? I have no idea on that one. Maybe you can find out while we're doing something else. Nikkei down 386. They are not trading today either. So that was yesterday. The Hang Seng is up 18. They are trading today. And the Shanghai is down 55. So some people are trading today. Some people aren't. Bonds, we are trading all day today, by the way. It's not a half a day. A 10-year down 1 basis point, 4.53. The Bund unchanged, 2.37. Japan down 1 basis point, 1.08. That was kind of make it kind of odd for the market yesterday, didn't it, Greg? With the bonds were, interest rates were actually down, and yet the market was getting clobbered. It's a little weird. Oil up 59 cents, 71.58. Brent unchanged, 74.39. Natural gas down 16 cents, but still 3.77 after a huge move up yesterday. We've got gold up 540, 26.23. It's been getting clobbered this week. Silver down 4 cents, 29.37. Gold did have a pretty good year, but still, it's been down the last week or two. Foreign exchange, the euro is 104, so again, it's even a little lower today. The British pound 125.32, so it's starting to go down as well. And we have the Japan, yen is at 156.74. Bitcoin has been all over the place, up 136, 94,550, down about 9,000 of its high, but still pretty high. And yesterday, like I said, we had a Dow down 418, S&P down 63, NASDAQ down 235. That was 1.2%, so not a good year last year. What do you have for us, Trevi, weather sports?
Good morning, everyone. It is 6:36 here in Chicago. It's 40 and raining. Travel warning. Possible snow tonight for New Year's Eve. Phoenix, 46 right now. Nice overcast. We're going to have cold weather in Phoenix also tonight, so that'll probably be about 45. Interesting.
Kevin's going to the Fiesta Bowl tonight.
Yeah, Fiesta Bowl. That's in Glendale.
Hope he brought his sweats.
Yeah. And traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 10 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook, 23 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 15 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 15 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 18 minutes. NBA, Bulls win at Hornets. That was 115-108. Monday Night Football, Lions win at Niners. That was 40-34. Both Goff and Purdy had over 100 QB ratings. And then, like you said, Fiesta Bowl tonight, Penn State, Boise State. That's in Glendale. That's all I got, Chief.
Did you see that last weirdo shot the guy took to put the Bulls in overtime?
I missed that one. What'd he do?
The guy took, he was like bent out. He was totally covered. He bent out and like comes up from a crouch and lines the ball up there and went right in. I couldn't believe it. He was like 8 feet below the, behind the line.
Huh. And we'll overtime. Post that highlight.
I think the Bulls won overtime, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. The well, we have Joel?
Good morning, Chief.
Hey, how are you, bud? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Putting a bow on 2024.
Well, let's hope we all get a nice, another spin around the sun, healthy and doing the show and markets behaving and a good year coming up. What do you think?
From your lips to, you're upstairs ears. You know, the higher the prices get, you know, the more the volatility you have. But, interesting setups here going into the end of the year, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, what do you make of I could get zero read of yesterday. We were down heavy. It looked like we were going to pull a rug out of the world. Then it came all the way halfway back, sat there for like 5 hours, then drifted lower again on the close, but nowhere near the low of the day. And now here today we're up a little bit. It's not really a clue, was there?
A lot of times, and we've talked about this, you know, a lot of times things in the pre-market can get, a little overdone. And, it was just, there really wasn't any specific news. It was, natural gas rally, geopolitical tensions, and, they took it down. And usually you get those bounces within the first 15 minutes, within the first half hour. Well, that's at least based on my experience. Unfortunately, it didn't, and I felt the pain of it. But it did turn around at 10:30. Nice rally back into the day. It was a big sell-off. We exceeded the average daily range.
We puked out on the close a little bit the last 15 minutes.
Yeah,
slid down
you puked
again.
Out on the close. Obviously, I'll call for an inside day-to-day. That's not a big deal. I just think you just have some, there's a lot of people that are like, okay, Santa Claus rally, I got to be long, I got to be positioned. And I think maybe this year I can't sell in 2024 because I don't want to pay the taxes. And I think, maybe you had some people, over the last couple of days say, I'm going to sell anyways. And I want my portfolio to look good going to year end. So, we've had a nice run. We've had two great years. You ran into some profit taking yesterday. And, so far, Santa Claus left the North Pole, but started out okay. He's having a hard time getting back. So I just don't think this year it's just going to go by the book as much as we think. I think you got a change in administration. But once again, I think it will come down to, to earnings and earnings expectations. And don't look any further than early in January where we start to get Q4 earnings. So obviously that's the most important thing. You could talk meme stocks, you could talk Bitcoin, you could talk to things, but if companies are delivering good numbers, they'll be able to satisfy the very high valuation that we're trading at, and we'll continue higher. If stocks come in and they say, hey, we meet in this quarter, we're lowering for Q1 and 24, then I think you see a big reversal in the S&P.
Well, what do you make of the, talk about a five-minute discussion. What do you think of the politics of all this? And I'll continue this with Kenny. When I say the politics of it, I'm talking about strictly at the markets. I mean, since, you know, whatever, all the big shots have been running down. You know, Musk is all over the guy. You know, his nose up his behind, for God's sake. And we've got, you know, Bezos, all these other guys running down to Mar-a-Lago. Those stocks appear to be, you know, who's promising who what, or if it's just a learning experience, I have no idea. But the fact is, those stocks are doing really well. We have a big position here at PTI. A lot of our clients are in the XLV, which is the healthcare part of the S&P. You know, it's one of the smaller ETFs. Well, smaller, it's one of the ETFs that adds up to the S&P 500. And we had a real nice year in there for most people. But then all of a sudden, thank God, we hit put protection, because it started the year at like 139, traded as high as 157. Yeah. Now it's down on the year. Is this all because of the RFK going in there and doesn't? I mean, they think he's going to do something. It's really the politics has dramatically changed some of these segments, or people's, I'll say, imputed politics, or what people think might happen, or I don't know. It's a I think that's a little overdone, but it might not be. I don't know. What do you think?
Definitely, the XLV was, you know, starting ahead, you know, lower before the election, but really got socked after the election.
Right.
So that's definitely a factor. To address your first question, and probably not going to get a lot of fans out of Stocks and Jocks world, you know, by making this statement, or I'm not. It's not a statement, but do you remember Warren Harding?
Oh yeah. Well, I don't remember. I mean, I know the name. I mean, I read something about him, but I wasn't alive when he was here.
Mm-hmm. Well,
talk about the president.
He was a president.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you go back and you dig into history, it's a very same, very similar to scenario to what we have now, where you had a very, you know, disgruntled American public. You had a president, you know, coming in and promising the world. He brought in his buddies. He brought in his cronies. And one of those cronies, do you remember the Teapot Dome scandal in 1920?
Yeah.
Yep. And that's, you know, to what you're seeing now, and that's the only thing what's going on with the current administration, the appointments. That is what's coming to mind here. And, of course, you know, we all know what happened, you know, 6, 7, 8 years later. We had the Great Depression. But we'll see if, you know, if the people that he's bringing in, the things that there's already infighting within the people that he's bringing in.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yep. I think there's going to be more gridlock than people think.
I do, too. Every Congress, you know, in your and my lifetime, in the last 25 years, and, Carl would know exactly, there's probably been 3 or 4 times that who's ever the presidency had both houses of Congress, and all they did was infight. They didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And both, whoever side it was.
Yep.
They had more fights amongst themselves than they did with the other guys.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, there always needs to be equilibrium in, you know, in politics, and, you know, things sway one way, and they go way too far one way, and then they go way too far another way, and, you know, what you hope for, you know, is some kind of equilibrium, you know, whether, you know, Trump is bringing us more toward, you know, that point of consensus and unity in our country will be determined. You know, you got to look at, you know, the way things were at the end of the Biden administration and whatever, you know, if you're a supporter of that party, you can't be happy with a lot of things that were going on.
Oh, you're not kidding there.
There, geopolitically, economically, you know, COVID, the crisis, you know, inflation, you know, I think you did okay. You know, you think it did okay, but, go ahead.
They're saying this inflation's coming right back. They're pouring money in the system now. There's no tomorrow.
That's what I think so.
The last month is a 7% annual rate, for God's sake.
I know.
Anyway, I know. You have a happy new year, buddy. We'll solve all the problems
back,
in the world
man.
Next week.
Dump my Wolverines. They're 16-point underdogs. They actually called me to play running back.
Oh, God.
I can't do it because I'm doing the show. But, boy, oh, boy.
How many guys you got in the portal?
It's not portal. We got a half a dozen, nine guys. Half of our defense is going to the NFL. Three or four of our offensive starters transferred. It's going to be a long game. I'm going to be there, but the Crimson Tide are. I don't know if I'd lay the 16, but man, I'm ready for a butt.
It's tomorrow, right?
No, today noon.
Oh, really? Well, watch some of that. All right, thanks, bud. Yep. Do we have Kenny?
We do.
Hey, buddy, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Are we going to have a spin around the sun very healthy this year?
This year, I mean 2025 or 2025? 2024 was pretty good.
Yeah.
2025, you know, I'm bullish on it. I think the first half of the year is going to be a little bit uneasy. I think stocks going to reprice. To your point, you just said it. You think inflation is going to rear its ugly head. You know me. I'm in that same camp with you. Is that I do think that's going to be the surprise. And so what I think the surprise is going to be is that the narrative out of the Fed is going to change. I don't think we're going to get rate cuts in 2025. I hate to say it. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that inflation is going to rear its head and they're going to be forced to either do nothing or raise. And I think that's going to be the issue for investors to have to deal with, right?
Well, but if they're going to start reinflating the money supply, the rates are going to go down. Whether they cut them or not is their own. That's their announcements. But fact is, I mean, the short term rates. If you pour money in, you should or could get short term rates coming down and 10-year rates going up. Which is, I'm not so sure that's what they want, but that's what they're looking for.
Well, it may not be what they want, and that may be what they get. But barring that, if inflation goes up, who really cares? The truth is, Do you care more when you go to the grocery store and you pay more for your food, or do you really care what the 2-year rate is tomorrow or the next day or next week? It doesn't impact you, the 2-year rate, on a daily basis.
No, plus you and I can't borrow with that. We got to go get a credit card at 30%.
Baloney.
Yeah.
That's baloney when they say that, because what makes a difference to you and me and everybody else who's listening to you and me is what it costs them every day they go to the supermarket for steak and fish and chicken and cereal. Cereal is out of control. $10 a box. It's ridiculous, right?
Well, you're buying the good stuff.
Maybe it's not. It might be $7.99 a box, though, but it's ridiculous,
You're not one of those Fruit Loops guys, are you, or something?
No, I'm not a Fruit Loops guy. I'm very basic. Either Cheerios or Special K, maybe the Special K with almonds in it. Yeah, I'm boring like that.
Cheerios are our biggest snack food in the office when I get it.
Everybody Which one is?
Cheerios. We just love snacking on them.
First of all, there's none of that. There's none of that red dye in it. There's none of that other crap in it. It's just Cheerios, right?
Yep. What the?
You guys are pretty lame.
We're old and we're lame. At least he did get some kind of...
Come on, man. Grill up an omelet. Don't be an idiot.
Okay. Listen, funny that you say that, you know, because I used to love eggs in the morning and omelets and all that stuff. But ever since this health issue I'm having, suddenly eggs just... I can't get myself to eat an egg in the morning. And I don't know why. Because I used to love eggs. Now I can't eat an egg in the morning.
Well, maybe this year you'll be able to.
Well, let's keep your fingers crossed. I'm hoping you're right.
Let's, yes. What the? I mean, if you were, I was just talking to Joel about this. The XLV is down on the year. I mean, since our RFK got put in there? I mean, are we going to start seeing this? It's sort of. I've had a little bit of theme lately, Kenny. You're not on enough to know, but somehow or another, are we the country? Seems like everybody who has an idea, everybody wants to build something. Everybody wants a new factory. Everybody has all this stuff. The first place they run is to some politicians behind and stick their nose up it. I mean, do we not trust our own capital markets anymore? If you need, I was looking, look at the U.S. Steel thing and Nippon. Nippon's going to put $1 billion in there. Wait a minute. If U.S. Steel, if we're going to do more in the military here, which it looks like we're going to, I mean, I think we probably have to. Those contracts, if U.S. Steel gets some of those contracts, why can't they take those contracts in that future? Raise $1 billion in stock like anybody else. Are we totally forgotten what the whole market is all about?
Well, you know, that's a good point, because they absolutely should do that, right? And I'm confused. You know, have we forgotten, or has the market just changed, right, with the world? As the world changes, as the market changes, as the outlook changes? I hope it doesn't, because I think the capital markets are key to, you know, capitalism, to how this country functions, right, and really how a lot of the world functions. But I hope not, for sure. I mean, look at steel. I didn't realize this. Steel is down 36% year to date.
Yeah, it's getting its ass kicked.
It's had a horrendous year.
Yeah, but I mean, you see it on the sports side, which you know, aggravates the hell out of me. But obviously, those guys have a special, in their own mind, have a special place. If somebody wants a new stadium and they're going to want to do concerts and everything else, okay, put your balance sheet together, put your income sheet together, show how you're going to make money, and go borrow it or sell stock. That's what we do here. Or we don't do that anymore. We got to go right to the government and like do something with those guys.
Right. Right. I hear you. I hear you. And I'm not really sure why that's the case suddenly. Like, what changed, right? What changed to cause that to happen? I don't know.
I mean, the whole purpose of the markets that you and I love is to create a secondary market so companies can raise money and people have an outlet to get rid of or invest afterward. The market doesn't exist. It's not supposed to be a casino. It's supposed to be a place where you can trade IBM. IBM gets priced. If IBM has another idea, needs more capital, everyone knows right what it's worth. They go out and get more stock, or they can go out and get bonds. That's what the market's for. It's not really, well, I mean, people have investments, so what you and I do is important, but that's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is so people can raise capital, correct?
Yeah, that is the purpose of it, so people can raise capital.
What percentage of investors have any idea that that's the purpose of it? 1%?
I would like to think, if you're an investor, that you understand kind of the basics of the market, right? I would like to think that, and that you'd understand that's the whole reason the markets exist, right? To raise capital, to expand opportunity, to be entrepreneurial, and if they don't, shame on them.
I mean, right now the first call is going to the politician, not to your investment advisor or your, what do you call
Correct.
The guys that go out and get the money for you?
Yeah. Correct.
And it's kind of scary. Do you have any predictions for the year?
So the one I think the market's going to be surprised about the Fed. I think that there's a real possibility that rates go up and not down, or at least stay flat, that we're not going to get a rate cut in 2025 the way they expect. That's number one. Number two, I think that, you know, the quantum stocks, a lot of these stocks that have been in the news lately, IONQ and RTGI, and those quantum names are going to continue to excel because of the role that they're going to play in the changing dynamics of AI, which is only going to get smarter and smarter and smarter as the year goes along, right? I don't know if you use AI at all. Some of these AI.
We're starting to do a whole basket of trading for the quantum stocks for some of our people.
Yeah. Yeah, the quantum stocks have been really crazy. And, you know, Sylvia Jablonski was the first one to kind of come out with this quantum this ETF that kind of includes the whole group, right? QTUM, I think, is the symbol. Quantum, I think, is, you know, QTUM is the symbol. But I think that's going to continue to be a very big story in 2025. And so I think people need to jump on that fact. I also think Bitcoin is going to be an ongoing story, because I think this administration and people that are lining up really want to bring it more into the mainstream. They want to be able to allow you to take your Bitcoin and go deposit it in a bank and actually earn interest on it, and to be able to borrow against it, versus like you do with your cash, right? You have cash in the bank, you can borrow against it, you're going to earn interest on it. They're really pushing to kind of bring Bitcoin into that space. So that's going to be a very, very interesting conversation to see how that plays out. And if it does, I think that then once again changes so much in terms of opportunity, in terms of how people will view it, and maybe then how it gets regulated, because it will need to be, you know, listen, I'm not saying it shouldn't be regulated. It should absolutely be regulated. But I think if they bring it more into the mainstream like that, it's going to really change, you know, that whole narrative and how people view it. So I'm excited about that.
I'm going to lop one out there, Kenny. You're not going to like it. The difference in people's views of Bitcoin and whether you own one or whether you don't are so diametrically opposed, it's scary. I don't have any. It looks to me like a tulip without a tulip. And one of these days, the thing's going to break down and we have a real problem. That's my view of it. I mean, I hope you're right, to be honest with you. But
yeah.
Any kind of regulation, that goes in there, if you know, we're going to have our four-year audit with the NFA next week or 2 weeks, PTI, crazy. But any kind of audit of that stuff and what they do and how they figure out the stuff that's lost and any kind of regulatory review whatsoever, to me, puts it out of business. I don't see how they could subject themselves to anything like that.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't either. You know, I'm in the same camp as you.
I mean, who runs it? Well, we don't know. Some guy with a beard. He was like in the Kung Fu movie, and he went back on his mountain. You know, I mean, well, there's no number you can call if something's lost. No, it's just there. Who takes care of it? Everybody. What do you mean everybody? I mean, I don't know how they get through question number five. I mean, to me, it's an artificial stock.
Yes, it is. It feels kind of like an artificial stock, but I think people are going to start to view it as less that, right? I think it's going to become very much the main reality into the mainstream, right? I really do. I was skeptical for a long time, but I'm changing kind of my view as I see this unfold, as I listen to the conversation, as I learn more about it, as I see what I think they're going to try to do with it. I think they're going to try to bring it more into the mainstream. And, you know, listen, change happens, right? Good, bad, or indifferent, change happens. And so I think this is a significant change.
I just have an issue, obviously, with everybody who owns it can't even tell me what it is. Well, is it a currency? Not exactly, because it moves around more than
the
currency.
It's the future. Come on.
It's the future.
Is it a store of value? You know, some people look at it as a store of value.
Well, okay,
right?
and what is... I honestly believe, Kenny, is the world continues to grow apart, which it looks like it is, and we continue to screw around with the fiat currencies like we have been doing, which I'm diametrically opposed of. I want a 2%, 3% growth in money supply every year, and that's the way it ought to be with the population and the economy.
Right.
I mean, so it doesn't surprise me that somebody has popped up with a alternative currency. I mean, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the Arabs or somebody could put something together where we'll call it a pokeri, and it's worth every dollar's worth a a cup of oil or something. If there was some kind of value to it, we'd say, look, we're going to take over this currency thing. Could you guys, all you do is print more of it? You know, screw you. We're going to have one where we actually know what it's worth. I would think that thing would take the world by storm but I don't know what this one is. I mean, it's degraded into this thing. We trade it like it's Nvidia or something. Oh, there is no company there. It's to me, and I don't even know. I can't define it. So anyway, but this will play out. I'm sure I'm wrong. It wouldn't be the first time. But I mean, to me, it's like in the back of my brain, in one of the history of economic thought courses I took at University of Chicago, was a statement that every currency will eventually drop down to its actual value.
Well, right.
There is none. I mean, a dollar is a dollar. You can weaken it as much as you want. Still, fact is, we do have bridges and aircraft carriers. We got something. Now, should there be half as many dollars in circulation as there are?
Probably.
Because of the inflation, the answer to that is absolutely yes.
Yes. Yes. 100% yes.
But, again, it will play out. You are correct. I just hope that it doesn't become like some of these stocks have become. It's not an investment. It's a religion.
Well, and which is why, like someone like me, and when people ask me, I own some. I own a tiny percentage compared to, the portfolio, just because I want to be in it. I want to feel it. I want to be part of it. But if it blows up, it's not gonna bankrupt me, right? If it blows up, so I'm okay with it, right?
Well, but I'm saying is you can't. There are people that feel the same way, worse about Apple than used to about Cisco. Sony, I mean, Polaroid, I mean, you name it. I mean, the fact is, these things have a life to them.
$1 billion a quarter.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so where's Apple going? Is Apple going away? I don't think so.
No, I don't think it is either. But, at some point, I've got it at 41 PE, which is normally, it's been around a long time, it's 30 or 31.
Right.
Well, now, should it be 10? No. They make money all hand over fist, like you say. But 41 is historically high. And I think, people need to mentally do the math. I'm not saying anybody should sell it. But if it goes from 41 PE back to, say, a more historical norm 30, that's a 25% hit. That's a long way. I mean, the numbers are getting so big that the correction to the norm is getting pretty big, if you even look at it that way. That's a problem.
But we could say that about a lot of things, right?
Sure.
Listen, I've been talking about, am I surprised over the last couple of days that we've seen the market pull back? No, I expect it's going to pull back some more. And it needs to. Otherwise, if it continues to go higher, when the day comes that it starts to correct, it is going to get even uglier, right? So I would love to see the market continue to correct a little bit, digest, shake the branches, and then build another base. But it can't keep going straight up because the decline is going to be really ugly.
Are you the least bit concerned? I mean, I know the answer to this is probably yes, but I'm not going to lead the witness. On the way up, it looks like the sellers just disappear on the days we go up, 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 right? Now, that has a flip side to it. Are you surprised? 2 weeks ago, we had that one horrible day when the Fed guy came out or was doing his speech. And then the last couple days here, it looked yesterday and it looked like Friday, we might pull the rug out of it. There wasn't a buyer anywhere, and all of a sudden a couple leaked in. Looks to me like there's just as much or just as lack of liquidity in the downside there is on the upside.
Yes, but also, yes. But also understand that we're in these last couple of days of the year. There's a lot of people away from their desks. Lots of the action is being driven by the computers and the algorithms. And when I put it in my note this morning, you know, the algorithms just operate on a mathematical formula. And when they breach levels or levels that it's like that the programmers identified, when stocks or indexes breach a level, all the algorithms know is, okay, we breached this level, you have to go into sell mode, and they start to sell it. Well, the buy side algorithms understand those same levels, so when we breach the levels, the buy side algorithms recognize that the sell side algorithms are going to pile in, and so they pull back. Right? When the human beings are involved, like when everyone comes back from vacation and everyone's back at their desk, then I think you see a little bit more stability. But I've been saying this all along, is that don't get yourself all worked up, because the volumes are muted and the moves are amplified as a result. That's all.
Well, I guess I'm with you on that. It was the day that Powell had his oopsie when he was talking or whatever.
Yeah.
When I see, you know, a stock like Tesla, you know, I'm no big fan of where Musk is going in this, our new prime minister, wherever the hell he is. But the fact is, that's a real company. They were down 10%. That's kind of a real lot for on any given day for some. I mean, there was nobody that was a buyer 5% down or 6 or 7. I think it was down $46 that day. I was stunned to see that. Stunned.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was down. But remember, there were buyers because for every trade, there has to be two sides. So when you say there are no buyers, there were buyers. They just pulled way, way back, and they wanted to be anxious to sell as God. Because every time I sell a stock, you buy it. So there's two sides of the trade. So people go, the buyers are on strike. The buyers aren't on strike. The buyers are just pulling back.
Yeah, it was like the buyer was like one linebacker, you or me, with the whole offensive line coming at us. We were there, but we got mauled. We were in a hot tub afterward.
Yeah.
Well, Kenny, I want you to have a healthy and happy New Year, bud. I love talking to you, and we'll convene again next Tuesday. Are you're probably home this week? No seminars or anything, but
No, I'm home. Yeah, I'm around.
All right, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 38. We're gonna have about 2 second break. We'll come back with Professor Hal.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now. Money. Get away. Get a good job with your pain. You're okay. Money. Welcome Craig Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 29. So much for the huge rally. We were just up 20 and 75. We gave up half of that in a nanosecond. Professor, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
All right. I got all kinds of stuff to talk to you about. All kinds of stuff. Just saying. What about, you're our nuclear engineer guy, and Carl and I talked a while about Jimmy Carter making the decision to really kind of, I won't say put the lid on, but do a lot of stifle the development of certainly the feeder reactors and those kinds of things. As our nuclear expert, why do you suppose he did that? Do you have any idea?
Why, who did what?
Jimmy Carter said, you know, he basically bleep canned
the debris. I don't understand that, because Jimmy Carter was a nuclear power plant officer on a submarine. So
he was on a surface ship too. Was a surface ship like yours?
He was an officer of the nuclear power plant Navy. And, you know, I was a nuke. We called them nukes. I was a knuckle dragger. I rebuilt turbines and pumps. And I actually, one year on the Truxton, USS Truxton, before it was decommissioned, it had a leaky reactor valve that, you know, it was an air valve that isolated the nuclear power plant. A system on it, and it needed to be repaired, but there was no valve to isolate it from the water in the primary coolant. And so what I did is I built this liquid nitrogen freeze seal. We use liquid nitrogen to freeze the water inside the pipe so we could drain the water from the valve, and we had to replace the packing gland that, you know, prevent the water from leaking out and into the engine room. And I built the liquid nitrogen freeze seal and maintained it. I had runners going from the pier to the engine room, and I would literally pour liquid nitrogen into the styrofoam seal to maintain the ice plug so we could work on this packing gland. And in my evals that year, it said that I saved the Navy over $100,000 by doing it in-house instead of having private contractors do it from the port. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, I don't understand why he did that. I have no clue. I mean,
was he privy to a couple of near misses or something that he just didn't trust people to?
Well, I don't think there were any real near misses. Only in the early years of the nuclear program in Idaho, in Arco, Idaho, there was a incident when nuclear power was in its infancy. And the reactor blew, and it caused a release of radiation. But that was in the infant stages. Admiral Rickover was in Congress, and to demonstrate how safe his style of nuclear power plants were, he drank the water. Legend has it. I've never actually verified this, but legend has it that he drank water from a nuclear power plant, from the primary system. He drank the water to prove that it was safe. Now, the Russians, their nuclear power plants, the Soviets, their nuclear power plants were liquid metal. I think there was silicone, liquid metal reactors. And the problem with that is they're really efficient, but man, they make everybody sick. People, you know, actually got sick from radiation poisoning. But we used water-cooled systems. And the half-life of water was, I forget the exact.
What was half-life? Well, you were on a cruiser, right?
I was on a little tinny cruiser, yeah.
So what if somebody started landing shells on the thing? How safe was the reactor?
Well, it was pretty safe. I mean, they did all kinds of testing out there. When I was a staff instructor at the A1W plant, which was the number three engine room, of the Enterprise was first built in Idaho, and they did aircraft carrier launch simulations there with a thing called a dump condenser. And I train students there. And it's been a while, but those reactors are pretty safe. And one thing about it, if a nuclear-powered cruiser is sunk in the ocean, you know, it's going to be pretty safe, I think. I mean, they designed it to be safe. So I don't think anybody really worried about that.
Stuff. I mean, it wasn't like you took the old cruiser out there and you had the New Jersey blast it with 15, 16-inch shells to see what happened or anything like that. How could you test it?
Well, I mean, when those rods drop, they drop. right? When the control rods drop, it stops all nuclear reactions. So in a case like that, you would just scram the reactor. The rods would drop. They would lock. And it'd be like a big ball of metal at the bottom of the ocean. So it's pretty stable.
But you wouldn't have some huge explosion. You just have a hot spot in the bottom of the ocean.
Well, no, it wouldn't even be a hot spot because the rods,
okay,
which are filled with embedded with hafnium and barium, I think it's been a long time, but they're embedded with that. And once those rods drop, it stops all fission. Okay. So I think it'd be pretty safe. I mean, it'd be safer than the uranium that is in a rock in Africa, for example.
Okay.
That's given off radiation, right?
All right, that's interesting. One of my,
because there's naturally occurring uranium, and there's naturally occurring radiation all throughout the world, right?
Oh yeah,
it's in rocks.
I mean, I know,
right?
That I don't know as much as you, but I mean there is.
So you know, like my uncle Steve, I have really a couple of connections to this industry. My uncle Steve Snar, he was kind of a POS, alcoholic and whatnot, but he drove the semi trucks or those big trucks into the mountains of Nevada, where they were going to store radioactive waste 8,000 feet above the water table in a really arid part of
Yucca
Nevada.
It was Yucca Mountain or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. He was one of the truck drivers. He was driving the cement trucks in there. And they never let that place... I mean, they spent all the money, and it never went operational, from what I understand.
No, it never did, but he spent a whole bunch of dough.
But power plant materials... stored at that elevation, that far above the water table, I mean, it's far superior to the natural radiation you get from rocks, just in a forest or on a mountain somewhere.
Do you think the burrito reactor idea would have worked?
They had one in Idaho. They had the burrito reactor on the highway to Arco, Idaho, along the highway.
Really?
The old burrito reactor there. It's now a... tourist site.
You went there and just started.
They have these nuclear power plants. They have these nuclear power plants that are like, you know, garbage pail size, that, you know, are portable, and you can put them in a community. And I think the fact that big tech like Google and Apple and all these companies that are wanting to build out their AI operations, they're going to be the drivers of nuclear power. There's going to be a resurgence in nuclear power. I can guarantee you that.
Well, I think you're right.
Unless something else comes along.
Why does the I don't know, it's maybe more of a Carl question, but I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago, it was way before COVID, for the cloud stuff, I think it was Microsoft or might have been Microsoft or Apple, one of those two, they were going to put these huge computing centers, for lack of a better term, all around the country for all the cloud stuff, and because it took so much energy, and the one they were putting up in, I don't know, it was Mount Prospect or Schaumburg or someplace here in Chicago. It might have been the only one that ever was completed, but they were going to use 25 or 30% of all the energy in the entire community.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden it got more efficient,
and they just dropped all the plans. What makes you think that this AI is not going to get more efficient?
I think AI, if you think about the computer that Russian chess player played, Big Blue or something like that, IBM built, you think about the amount of power that went into just powering a computer that played chess. AI, right now, AI is like a genius, right? A genius that never sleeps. The smartest person that you're ever going to meet that never sleeps, never takes vacation, never gets, you know, rarely gets sick. I mean, you have to put it, you know, probably shut it down to, you know, do some maintenance on it. But for the most part, it never gets sick. Never sleeps. It's like the Terminator, right? It will not stop.
But it still won't. Doesn't think. Like everybody seems to.
Yeah, it's an idiot, and they need humans to train it, to educate it, right? But the amount of power that's required for that, unless there's a huge advancement in technology like quantum computing, it's going to require a lot of power. And I think the disruption that's going to come, that's going to really lower the power needs of it, is maybe 10, 20 years into the future. So I think they're going to need the power for it.
But
I think that's going to be the power.
When I was a Ute, I was at Allied at Pullman. I was I did a lot of AFEs, application for, I don't know what they were for, application for investment, essentially, AFIs. And we had, and all these firms did, we had a huge computer center down in Texas someplace. And we had the IBM, or the, were they 3170s or whatever the hell those things were. There were these big honking machines that you had to water cool them because they used so much power. And somewhere down in Texas, I don't know if they had a nuclear plant or what they did, but they had, everybody was down there because of the power, even more so than in Chicago. And it was in a building that was all concrete. You had, the temperature had to be, I don't know, 50-some degrees, so you didn't have to, you didn't have to cool the things down as much. It was absolutely this, this essentially pillbox for computers. And then all of a sudden, I was there like 2 years. Then there was a new computer you could buy. Well, you didn't buy, you rented them from IBM.
Yeah.
They were like 20 grand a month. Well, the new one at 20 grand a month, and we're talking 1977, they were 20 grand a month.
Yeah.
And the new one came in and replaced 10 of the old ones at 20 grand a month. So, and you couldn't, the sublet fee for one of the old ones, if you could find somebody who wanted it, was like 500 a month or 1,000. And you had like five years left on the thing. That's why IBM made an incredible amount of money back then. But the energy needs, but my view of the world is that as time has gone by, the energy needs for computing has got nothing but go straight down. And all of a sudden...
Well, I think that would have been the case before AI. I mean, because right
now... What makes AI so you just use so much more capacity?
Well, it's just the number of the sheer number of calculations that you have to make. I mean, think about a car, a self-driving car that's trying to drive down the road. Think about all the things that humans do without... if you think about the energy consumption that a human brain uses to make all these calculations, decisions at simultaneous points in time, that kind of decision-making at a computer level with our current state of computing, it just requires a lot of power because of all the calculations that are being made.
Okay, I get
right?
it.
Yeah. I mean, think about AI. AI will generate an image where... the human still has like six fingers, right? So the AI is basically an idiot at this point. It's not smart enough. And I think as it becomes more and more intelligent, it's going to require more and more decisions. And in order to power those decisions, you have to give it electricity. And I think the quantum computers and the next thing, the next revolution in computing, it's got to be 10 to 20 years away. And those circuits, those microcircuits, are like molecules wide at this point. So on a computer chip, we're talking about a molecule wide circuit, right?
Wow.
So I think we've got to the point where, in our current state of technology, we're about as good as you can get. The next leap is quantum computing, and quantum computing, from what I understand, is not ones and zeros, but infinite many. You know, like ones and zeros is only two options. But quantum computing, I think it takes it to the point where you can have infinite many at that moment in time instead of just a one and a zero.
Well, maybe one day we'll have a little class where you and Carl can talk about all this and we can educate the dummies like me. What do you think? I mean, the new administration has promised so much. We're already starting to see chinks in the armor, actually, on what people think is going to happen and what logically can happen. Even with the deportation piece, I mean, I don't want to debate what they're doing, but right now they've got people trying to back off some of the comments they made at a lot of the rallies where, on day one, we're going to take, you know, a million people and stuff them in boxcars and get them the hell out of here, basically. Now, I think Trump probably never had that envisioned, that what he was going to do, and I think he was on a couple of shows and said basically he was going to do, and it's a lot different than that vision, but a real lot of his supporters have that vision, are convinced that's what he's going to do, and if he doesn't, we're like pissed at him. I mean, is there...
Well, I think most of his supporters, I think the immigrants that they're really worried about are the ones that are involved with the organized crime, the cartels.
Yeah, but there you go being logic again. I'm not talking about you or me or... how any of us would go about it.
They're the ones that they're really worried about.
I
think, you know, Trump and everybody, you know, the thing about time is people have a chance to, like, reflect. And most of what Trump promised his first time around, he didn't do, right? He didn't have Mexico build a wall. So I think people understand, his supporters understand his hyperbole. He engages in a lot of hyperbole.
But I mean, some people actually expect it.
Yeah, but I think that's very few. I think most people are realistic. I think what they like about Trump is he says things that he thinks. He doesn't filter it through some corporate vanilla filter, right? He just says it. And that's what I think people like about him. He says what's on his mind. And I think that's the reason why his...
I have a hunch that he's going to end up... You know, I hope he's going to end up being reasonable on a lot of this stuff, but...
I think he is. But, I mean, the guy's bluster, right?
But, you know, the issue I have... I don't have an issue with any... How can I say this? You guys are my best pals, and the stuff you bring to the show is spectacular. I do have a little bit of a pushback, you, Kevin, and a lot of guys on the show, maybe because you don't do it all the time like I do. There's a huge difference between what you think you said and what other people hear.
Yeah,
I'm not as big a fan of Biden. Despite what you and I and Kevin and everybody know, they're going to be more rational. They're going to figure out who the criminals are. They're going to try and we sure as hell hope that, and I think we know that. That's not what people heard. That's all I'm saying. It's not what people heard.
I think what's going to happen is they're going to deport. They're going to try the deportations are going to happen amongst the criminal illegal aliens. That's what's going to happen.
We're at 100% agreement. What I'm saying is I know.
And I think
the other immigrants,
some of them may go back to their home country because maybe they can't get the job, and the state governments aren't getting the subsidies to care for the ones that aren't criminal.
All I'm saying is the group on Elston Avenue, which I think is wending themselves into society pretty quickly, it seems like it. There are people who think on the 21st, 15 paddy wagons are going to show up and throw them in there.
I don't think that's going to happen at all.
I don't either. I'm saying a lot of people. Yeah. We'll see what happens there. Let's not talk about that.
I think what's going to happen is the benefits are going to be turned off, for the most part. And when those benefits are turned off, the ones that stay are the ones that are going to start a business or get a job. The ones that leave are the ones that maybe came here because they thought they could get a free hotel in New York City. I think that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of self-deportation.
I don't know if anybody did that. But anyway, maybe they did.
Well, you know, when you live in New York and a Best Western covers up their Best Western sign and there's National Guard running the hotel, you know, people are living there probably rent-free who just came here illegally. Meanwhile, there are veterans living on the street in New York City, right?
Yeah, well, to a certain extent, and this is the part that really bothers me about the way they've been used politically.
They're
to scapegoat it. If there wasn't one here, we still have 90% of the problem.
Yeah, I like Milton Friedman's take on immigration. Me personally, I don't believe in border walls, and I don't believe in passports. I believe passports are virtual border walls. And I believe in, you know, wherever you want to live is where you want to live in the absence of public assistance, right? So if newcomers to this country come here and they want to work and they want to start a business, I have no problem with that whatsoever. The problem I have is the politicians floating these benefits to encourage people to come here and not work or not start a business. That's the problem I have. In the absence of those government subsidies, I say open the floodgate, man. Lift the, you know, when all these people, I believe in free markets. So free trade, unregulated trade between consenting adults, whether it's labor, products, or services, is the tide that lifts all boats. And a bunch of people want to come from Mexico and find work and start businesses, all the better. Because what does that do? It raises the wage in Mexico because there's less labor there. The people that have those jobs in Mexico now can afford to buy American products.
Well, you would think that you're taking the same approach of the Milton Friedmanites and so forth.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of people.
In the absence of public assistance, I say no border wall and no passports.
Okay, but now the mistake. Well, let's talk about this a little bit because it's still going on today and you still hear this debate. I was going to hit you up with this thing with George Stigler here, but maybe I'll do that next time. I'm talking about at the end of 100 years of regulation, how much of our electric bill is really lower than if we just let them charge whatever they wanted? His point is probably not any different. Anyway, because if there
were no restrictions on nuclear power plants, I would say that our electricity rates would be a lot lower. Or if there was no restrictions on nuclear natural gas power plants, you know,
But how do you the issue that had essentially got, I won't say he was tossed, but he left Chicago for Stanford, Milton Friedman, and I think the part of the problem was that he had been consulting with Allende down in Chile, who was a really bad guy. I mean, he liked killing people, he liked doing a whole bunch of bad stuff. And Milton Friedman's idea, actually fairly similar to yours, is that if you could have a free market, the free market would eventually demand freedom in terms of politics. And I think he honestly believed that at the time. This is 1975. He probably had every chance, every reason in the world to believe that. And plus, I think he was a pretty straight guy. Not none of that, but I think he was absolutely wrong in the sense that he would never have guessed that as free market as China has become, that it would still be a totalitarian regime. He would have been convinced that could never have happened. He would never have convinced. Now, I think the new president of Mexico is a big step forward, but he would have been all for putting a Chevy plant down there. He would have been stunned if 30 years later still making the same amount of money. His point was they would have had, the unions would have, they would have had somehow of organization, somehow they would have wrested some power from the management or the owners, just like we did in this country. But it seems now that if you look at, like we all do, if you look at the world through the Judeo-European American view, you come to conclusions that don't necessarily land the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Other people.
Well,
just,
you know, there's a series on Prime Video called The Man in the High Castle, and I just finished watching it. And it's really fascinating because the Nazis and the Japanese win the war in this series. And the Nazis and the Japanese have divided North America and South America, I think. The Nazis have the eastern part of the United States and the Japanese have the western. And it delves into the multiverse, too, which is really fascinating. And the time period is the 1960s, around the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it's that time period. It's really interesting. And the guy that ends up being the Nazi leader of the North American Reich, if you will, is a really fabulous actor. He played the Prince of Austria in the Illusionist movie, which I really love, with Paul Giamatti. But in the alternate world, because there's this portal, people travel from the alternate world to this dystopian Earth world, and they travel back and forth. In the alt world, he's a guy that chose to be a salesperson and to be a loving dad and lover of freedom. But in the Nazi Japanese version of the world, he rose through the ranks of the Reich to head, to be basically the governor of the North American Reich. And there's a scene near the end of the series where he's telling his wife that their son is still alive, because he'd been executed by the Nazis for being sick, right? And he's like, we can bring him to this world. And she goes, I don't want to bring him to this world, because we are the worst versions of ourselves in this reality. And then I think that's what happens. And that's why Milton Friedman's vision doesn't work, is because government, in the end, is a vehicle that very powerful people use to erect trade barriers, to erect protections in the industries that they sell in. Business people don't like free markets in terms of things they sell. They like free markets in terms of things that they buy.
Well,
and that's what government does.
The fascist economic system is actually, we're moving right towards it.
It is, yeah, exactly, yeah.
When I say the fascist
state
economic
capitalism.
System, I'm not talking about loading people on flat cars and taking them to.
No.
I'm talking about essentially three, four, five companies in every industry with their nose way up the ass of government.
Like big cows.
Yeah, the idea that you can, if you have an idea and you want to be a competitor, go to the markets, which I'm getting very worried about, Hal, that people don't use the markets anymore. They don't look at the. If you want to build an industry now, the first thing you do is to go to government. There's a there's a, it's almost like we're two worlds. We're, you know, Dan Janatis comes on every Thursday and talks about the mid-sized companies that Dan is really good at finding and investing people's money in their bonds and so forth. And he finds, you know, really good places, and people seem to make pretty good money, and they pay the stuff back. On one level, we're sort of still America, right? And yeah. Then when you notch it up a little bit, if you're big enough, hey, I want to build, if Microsoft wants to build another plant, seems to me their first calls to their government, maybe not Microsoft, but their first calls to their government, what are you guys going to do for me?
Yeah.
You know, before I even start. You know, and I don't know how that ever works. It seems like that's not competition at that point. Are they going to be, I mean, I keep asking myself, when I see these seven huge stocks get bigger and bigger and bigger, is this totally foolish? Is this 2000 all over again? Or this time, have they done it right? And there are going to be the only, is Home Depot and Lowe's going to be the only two places people buy lumber 10 years from now?
Yeah.
You know, if
yeah.
they are, they can raise the prices all they want. I don't know the answer to that.
Think about the unintended or intended.
Well, that's the thing. Are they
consequences
intended?
Of yeah. the COVID?
Yeah.
The unintended or intended effects of the COVID was to eliminate all the small businesses, right?
Without a doubt.
And it did a really good job of doing that.
Without a doubt.
And it subsidized the largest companies and strip joints, right?
Well, it said your restaurant had to close across the street from the
Applebee's
Walmart that's serving hot dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go to break here real quick. S&P futures up 1950. NASDAQ is up 74. We started to head down. Now we're coming back up again. Maybe we'll stay up today. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, the Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Howard. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 67. We were up more than this. Then we started the slide. Now we're back coming up to this much. So we're probably, two-thirds of where we were. We were up like 23 and 85. So we're still up. Dow futures are up 78. Individual stocks. And Microsoft up $1.64. Met up 274. These have all been getting hammered the last couple of days, but they're bouncing this morning over in Europe. And be careful because everybody's not open here. The DAX is not open. FTSE is open. We're up 52.6%. Kakaran is open, up 67. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei not open. We have the Hang Seng, which is open. We're up 18.1%. Shanghai, which is open, are up down 55. That's 1.6%. Whack. China stocks and three-year losing streak with annual gains of 15%, but they gave some back today. Bonds up down 2 basis points, 4.52. The Bund unchanged, 2.36. Japan unchanged at 1.08. Oil up 8 cents, 71.07. Brent up 4 cents, 74.03. Natural gas down 15 cents, 378. Arbob unchanged, 196. Gold, a little bit of a bounce up, 720, 26.25. It's been taken on the chin a little this week. Silver down 3 cents, 29.38. Again, under 29.50, silver has been a buy. I couldn't bring myself to buy any yesterday, but it has been a buy. Maybe Greg will comment on that. He's our futures dude. Copper down 6 cents, 4.02. Foreign exchange. And it's been a big, we got the euro now under 104, 103.93. It was 107 most of the year. So that's about a 3-4% move in a currency. That's a big deal. It's a huge deal. British pound 125.3. It spent most of the year in the high 127. So it's not as big a move there, but still some. Crypto Bitcoin up 1,000, up 1,100, 95,538. Maybe trying to get back to that record, which I think was 103, 104. And we have, that's it. We got Forest Traffic, Weather, Sports.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7:36 here in Chicago. 40 degrees, raining. Travel warning, it's slippery on the roads, and possible snow tonight. Phoenix, it is nice right now, 47. About 75 today. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 11 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 25 minutes. Eisenhower from Wohl, 15 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 15 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 18 minutes. Sports, Bulls win at Hornets, 115-108. Lions win at Niners. That was Monday Night Football, 40-34. And then in college football, today we have Alabama at Michigan. That's at noon. That's in Tampa. ReliaQuest Bowl, Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, Louisville versus Washington, that's 2 p.m. Sun Bowl Stadium in El Paso. South Carolina, Illinois, Camping World Stadium, Orlando, Florida.
I couldn't wait to go to that one.
Yeah, that's 3 p.m. on ABC. And Kinder's Texas Bowl, Baylor versus LSU at NRG Stadium in Houston. That's 3:30. And then finally, the Fiesta Bowl tonight, Penn State, Boise State, and Glendale. And that's all I got, Chief. Back to you guys.
Guess whose name is, I'll talk about, yesterday we were talking about some history with Jimmy Carter and Greg Gumbel and places like people like that. Plus, did you see the last survivor of World War II died on Christmas Day? I don't know if you know, if you were listening to the show yesterday.
Yeah.
He was.
I talked to a customer rep from Sheetz yesterday, and she told me her dad was 80-year-old veteran from the Cuban Missile Crisis. Wow. And that, and I recommended to her that since that time period when he was in the military, the Navy, he ought to watch maybe with her that series, The Man in the High Castle. And the reason why I called Sheets is because I had flex fuel in my van. Flex fuel is that these flex fuel. With I don't ethanol. Know if they still make them. But I had flex fuel in my van for 2 weeks. And after basketball practice Saturday morning, I was like, I got to fill the tank up. And I filled it up with that E15, like ethanol gasoline blend that is recommended for any vehicle, you know, older than the year 2001. The next morning, I couldn't get my van to start. And so I was freaking out because we just paid it off and I didn't want to buy a new car. And, you know, the flex fuel, you got the regular fuel. And I spent 2 days basically doing research after I talked to Sheets about their gasoline maybe being bad. And I did 2 days worth of research. I drained the gas I put in there into gas cans. And then I put in unleaded gasoline. I still had the same problem. And I was thinking about maybe I got to replace all these sensors and the ECU and the fuel pump relay, which is embedded in the fuse panel.
Oh.
And I was like, and then I realized that I smelled gasoline. I smelled gasoline from the engine. I thought, maybe it's flooded. And so I did some research on electronically fuel-injected cars. And the one, if you suspect it's flooded, like an old 68 Ford pickup truck, you hold the accelerator to the floor and you turn it on. And it sends an electronic signal to the fuel injectors that the car's flooded. Don't send any fuel to the cylinders. And it clears it out. And boom, after 2 days of struggling with this thing, and the internet was saying, hey, it's going to be really expensive to fix, right? All the AI bots I was talking to. In like 10 seconds, it started and ran. And it's been running great ever since. Not one place on the internet said the issue might be that it's flooded, right? It took me 2 days of reading.
I didn't really realize that an electronic ignition could flood.
Well, I think the reason why it can flood is because the switch from flex fuel, all flex fuel, to the tank being basically empty, to this other ethanol blend, that kind of shocked the system. And it probably tricked the system, and it opened the fuel injectors up, and it pushed all this fuel into the cylinders. And it was flooded from the get-go, right? Sunday morning, it was flooded. And I didn't realize it because, like you, Tom, I thought, there's no way an electronic vehicle can get electronically fuel-injected vehicle could be flooded like an old carbureted 1968 Ford.
Well, if it could, I never would have dreamed the fix was the same.
Yeah, but there's an electronic Trenox signal. Before you turn it to start, and you push that accelerator pedal to the floor and you turn it to start, it sends an electronic signal to the fuel injector to shut.
Greg, that's how you used to be able to, in a carburetor, if it was flooded, that's what you'd do. And then the thing would just, like, when it turned on, you felt like it was going to blow up, but it would turn on.
Well, that 68 Ford pickup truck that I had, it flooded all the time. And I considered putting an Elderbrock throttle body on it because it was flooding all the time. And I had to do tune-ups on that, like, once a month.
Oh, God.
If I didn't do a tune-up on that truck, like, once a month, set the dwell and set the gap, it would and set the timing.
Now, when guys like that, they have no idea what you're talking about. So
yeah,
the dwell,
but
and
yeah,
the gap and
the
timing,
the smell of gasoline in the engine made me think.
God,
you know, after going through all this troubleshooting, made me think maybe it's flooded. And I found out, yeah, electronic fuel injected vehicles can flood.
We don't want to. We don't want to be nailing Greg with, like, advancing the timing and retarding the time. We're not talking about any of that stuff. Yeah, I got something. Talk about a history, out of blast from history here, since we've been talking about it this week a little bit. Guess what happened? You got to answer me this question, maybe Greg. Last Madoff-Vittman victim fund payout brings recovery to nearly 94% of the scheme losses. 16 years ago. What have they been doing with this money for 16 years, holding on to it?
What's this again?
This is Madoff's. They're just paying off the last of the victims.
Yeah.
This is $4.3 billion would have been distributed by the fund to more than 40,000 victims. 130 countries.
Yeah.
This thing was one of the most fascinating deals ever. On every level, it was a total bleep up. And you know the weird part of it is, since this was a hedge fund, the design of a hedge fund is to not be part of the regulatory process.
Yeah.
Sophisticated people to be taken out. Well, this thing got so much federal scrutiny by everybody whining about they lost money from this guy, which I don't blame you. They ended up covering these people with SIPC, and increasing the fees that, like, firms like PTI had to pay to cover for these people.
Wow!
And the reason why they weren't here is because they didn't want to be here. They wanted to be in an unregulated environment.
You know, this is going to be this is going to sound selfish, but it's actually not. It's called tough love. If people invest in a guy like Madoff's outfit, and Madoff rips them off and he goes to jail, and government takes from me, who didn't buy into Madoff,
right, or PTI,
if the government does that, it creates moral hazard. And people don't learn the tough lessons.
Well, the people, not only some of his clientele, I know a lot of them.
If you are a sucker, it sounds horrible to say this, but if you get sucked into some kind of deal like this, you'd never learn the lesson that if somebody comes to you with I got a great deal for you, I always tell people it's not a great deal for you. It's a great deal for the guy selling
that
it.
80% of the people he sold this stuff to aren't alive 16 years later.
Yeah, maybe not, yeah.
But, you know, it was an interesting clientele.
Well, the interesting thing is, what's going to happen with Sam Bankman-Fried? Is he going to get a pardon because he gave all that money to the Democrats? I mean, that's even worse than what Madoff did, in my opinion.
He gave almost as much Republicans.
I know, but, I'll tell you, man, Nancy Pelosi, I mean, they were loving it.
He gave billions
to Democrats.
He was just giving it to the winners. He had one part of his group was giving it to Republicans.
Yeah, I wonder, is he going to be pardoned, right? It's one of the last pardons.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he'd get commuted.
Yeah.
But, you know, the weird part of a lot of the Madoff victims, well, there was a guy on the trading floor, good friend of mine, just went to his 80th birthday party not that long ago. And, you know, it's weird how when you're in the business, as long as I have. I mean, I wrote there was a lady running for a treasurer in Illinois, and I was on her campaign team, and we did something like nobody ever did, or not about nobody, but we actually wrote up a whole prospectus of what she was going to bring to the office, and I wrote the finance piece, the investment piece. But you could only invest in U.S. securities. Virtually every state's like that, right, or county or whatever. So if you and I had an adult beverage bet every year, and you were the guy in Iowa and I was the guy in Illinois, over who would do better, we would be so close, it would be 1 year. You might go out 2 years on the federal scale, and I might stay at 1 year, and you did a little better than me, like a hundredth of a point or two. I mean, that's how close it was. And then there were, but I had the the information for virtually every county in the country, and everybody's making 3.1, 3.11, 2.99. Then there was Harris County, Texas, and Orange County, California, that are making like 15. I'm going, wait a minute, wait a minute. What are these idiots doing? You know, there's no way. I mean, if they would have said 4, I might have said, boy, do they have a great year. They got to be geniuses. But 15, come on. Now, this guy says, well, Bernie, and the whole world's making, you know, market's going up 7% a year, and the rates are 7%. People are making, the good people are making 10 or 12 or 15. All of a sudden, Bernie's making 30.
Yeah.
But the story was,
no way that, there's no way that was,
the story was that he had an angle. You know, he had, yeah, he essentially had an angle.
He was Ponzi scheme.
Well, I get that, but the story was he had an angle, and they all. But the clientele, and I'm not saying any bad about the clientele, figured he essentially had a patsy. That somehow he figured out something on the exchanges or whatever that was moderately legal, illegal, and this is what he pursued, and he was smarter than everybody else. You're right. He had a patsy, and the patsy was them.
Yeah.
I mean, they turned out to be the patsy, basically.
If you believe some snake oil salesman is able to make 30% a year, do you deserve to lose that money? You know, it sounds bad. It sounds like I'm worthless.
I believe you do. If he's doing it by selling puts, the 2 years before the 1987 crash, you could easily make 30% doing that. Problem is, if you started that week, but the oddest part about if somebody gave Bernie $100,000 in his fake sheets, the guys will tell the whole story. Bernie had two firms. His son ran a somewhat legitimate brokerage firm that was like PTI in the sense that you're audited, and all the stuff. He had a clearing firm. But he essentially had his own clearing firm. So if you have an account at PTI, your sheets are going to come from RBC. We don't print your sheets telling you you're up when you're down. I mean, somebody else does that. Yeah. When you're regulated, I can't. If you buy 1,000 shares of IBM today at PTI at 220, and it closes at 219, I can't tell you you're up $2. Duh. I mean, how am I going to do that? But he had his own clearing firm, so he could. But there are people, if they gave Bernie $100,000 and 2 years later he showed them that they were up $200,000 and now their account's 300, they think they lost 300. And I was talking to one of these guys. I go, wait a minute. The sheets were fake. You never made that money. Yeah, but it said I had 300. He owes me 300. At best, he owes you the 100 that you gave him. But people thought that they deserved the fake profits that were never made. It was an incredible. Bernie was one of the biggest sleaze bags ever. You know what Bernie invented? You'll never guess this.
Not what?
Because we had a mess with him when I was on the board of the SIBO.
Oh, wow.
Bernie Madoff bought the Cincinnati, essentially controlling amount of seats in the Cincinnati Stock Exchange.
Mm.
Well, actually, the CBOE bought the Cincinnati Stock Exchange, except for maybe 10 seats or 15 or something. Bernie bought the rest.
Hmm.
And there was a little-known favor college rule that if an exchange bought another exchange and owned 200 seats, they could only vote one of them. So even though the CBOE owned 90, 95% of the seats on the Cincinnati Stock Exchange, Bernie actually almost had a controlling interest.
Wow.
So back in those days, before we had these black pools and all this other stuff, all the exchanges, you could be a specialist in any one of the exchanges. There was Cincinnati, Midwest, there was the Pecos, Philadelphia, New York. I don't think there were any others. Or there was a Boston. There was like six. But they were real exchanges. And if you're an exchange, you had what's something called a specialist takeout function. And if I needed to buy 1,000 shares from New York, if IBM offered at 220, I could just take it right out. I could take it from the New York Exchange because they were all tied together electronically. So what Bernie did is he said, I'm gonna pay for this order flow. He invented payment for order flow. Hmm. He said, okay, the market on the New York floor in IBM is 150 to 150 and a quarter, or 150 and an eighth. Say it was a quarter. He was going to guarantee you the New York price, bid and offer, and he was going to rebate you a penny a share. It was originally a penny a share. So, but what would, and people say, what's the difference? I'm getting the fee out there in Schwab, and all these places couldn't wait to use the guy, right? Because he was rebating them. But now you say, what's wrong with that? Well, on the New York Stock Exchange floor, something like 60%, no, 30-some percent of all transactions occurred between the bid and offer. So if it's 150 to a quarter, and my order gets there at the same time as your order, chances are they're gonna fill it at an eighth, where both of us get better than the specialist bid and offer. So it stopped all that. That's the problem with payment for order flow, is your bids and offers widen out. So that's what Bernie did, and nobody could stop him, because he had control of the place, and that's what he brought to the world, was payment for order flow. Because if five guys bought it from him in a quarter, and he was leaning on the New York offer, and the minute he said, "Well, I don't really want this in a quarter," he just buy it from them. So yeah. he made a fortune doing that.
I think that points out this what happens is you put up these roadblocks, maybe regulations, and there's always guys that are smart enough to see their way around the speed bumps.
Yeah.
Right. And they mine them. And Michigan's textbook calls it, I think, financial innovation. In reality, it's just loophole mining.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you were, I could make a very eloquent speech. I would never do that because that's just me. I could make a very eloquent speech. Greg Pappas, what's the problem? You're getting the New York bid and offer. I'm guaranteeing you that. And by the way, because I'm rebating these guys a penny what the specialists used to steal, your commission is going from, you know, $50 a trade down to 20. What's your bitch, basically? And people have bought that, okay? And they bought that hook, line, and sinker, and are still buying it. But
it kind of sounds like the scam that Richard Pryor's character did in Superman movie, where he took the rounded off pennies and put it in an account.
Oh, by the way,
virtually in the space movie.
Every bank had somebody did that. Until they were found, But no, I mean, so Bernie made up. But I'm still. What do these guys do for 16 years with his money?
Yeah,
like, I can't imagine that. Can you?
Yeah.
Well,
all I know is the only way that somebody's going to be able to have those kinds of returns, if they have like insider information, if they're the spouse of a member of Congress who knows who's getting the contract, and they know when the announcement's going to be made. That's the only way you get those kinds of returns. There's just no way that a human can do that, right? And if you believe it, then I firmly believe that you deserve to lose your money. I'm sorry.
Well, you know who?
You shouldn't be on the taxpayer.
I'm going to say our producer should know the answer to this, and maybe you. What's the biggest connection between Bernie Madoff and one of the most amazing sports stories of our time in terms of
steroids?
No, in terms of salaries of baseball players.
Salaries?
Yep.
Hmm.
Is there a certain day every year where some guy in New York still gets paid?
No, I don't know enough about that.
Wait a second. Like an annuity?
Yeah.
Bobby Bonilla?
Yep. The owner
Bobby Bonilla is still getting paid?
No, if he isn't, he just stopped getting paid. His,
it's kind of like Germany paying war reparations up until about a few years ago.
I should know the numbers. He was owed, what was it, Greg? Was it $20 million or something from the guy from the Mets, or 18 or something? The Mets owner. The Mets owner bumps into Bernie Madoff, and he says, "I'm going to make you 30% a year." So he gave essentially Bobby Bonilla's money to this guy and said, "I'll pay you $1.5 million for like 20 some years," which was like 10% on the money, essentially a 10% annuity, thinking he was going to make 25 or 30 with Madoff. And Madoff went under. Duh. That did not work out for him.
It's like, you know, when I was in New York, Tom, I was, I like to talk to people. And I was talking to this, we were at my mother-in-law's house one summer, visiting, and I was talking to the teacher across, you know, the street, And he was telling me that, retirement pensions are great for New York City high school teachers. And I go, well, how much do you make a year? And he goes, 10%. I go, every year? And he goes, yeah, we make at least 10% a year. And I go, no, you're not making 10% a year. And he was shocked when I said that. I go, you're not making 10% a year. What's happening is the taxpayer of New York City is filling in the interest on your pension, filling it up to 10%.
Right.
You're not making that in the market. The taxpayer is paying into your pension to give you that 10% a year.
Right.
And he was shocked to find that out.
Well, nobody wants to hear any dirty details.
I didn't need anything. I didn't need any information to tell them that. There's no way they're going to make 10% a year.
But not many people put together the Bobby Bonilla legend with Bernie Madoff. But that's where the guy gave the money to.
And then there's just no way you're going to make 10% a year like that.
No.
Every year, 10% a year? Yeah. No way.
Well, hey, we got to do some predictions. We got a few minutes, both you and Greg. This time of the year, I mean, when I say this, I'll be meeting with my clients, and we're trying to pick, you know, what if they want to be in ETFs, which most do. We're going to try and pick which ETFs to be in. And 2 years ago, people wanted to be in the XLE, which was oil, because the year before it had a huge run up. Then it didn't do squat, and everybody wanted out. This year, everybody wanted in the XLV, the drug stuff. And even though we had puts and protected everybody and didn't, and still had an okay year, things down towards right where the year started. Now, is there a spot? I mean, do you like healthcare? Do you like basic materials? Do you like banks? I mean, if we were going to pick a place that does better than the rest, I have no idea. But, I mean, maybe you guys are a little better.
Well, I think the Fed's going to inflate. Is inflating.
Yep.
M2 is accelerating.
Why is that?
You look at the annual increase.
Why are they doing that?
I don't know, but you look at the annual increase of M2, it's accelerating.
It's up to 7%.
Yeah, and then you look at the deficit, you look at the long-term yields. I think investors believe inflation. They want that compensation to hold a 20-year bond, a 10-year bond. Those yields are going up. I don't think it's because we're in a robust recovery or the economy's growing robustly. I think it's because investors demand higher yields to sock away their money for 10, 20 years, and those yields are going up.
I'm going to ask the both of you guys. How's that for a sell side? How bad is the economy? On the show, most of us think it's not as rosy as they keep telling us. The first 2 months of the year, the Treasury receipts are way down. If we're doing better than last year, way better, how the hell can receipts to the government be down?
Yeah, I don't think the economy's doing well. I think it's doing well for a few select people. People get paid $300,000 a year to read the teleprompters. I think they think it's doing great. But I mean, you look at credit card debt and credit card defaults, you look at bankruptcies, it's pretty bad, I think, for most Americans. I mean, we have our credit cards paid off, but man, we're getting squeezed by this inflation. I mean, like Kenny said, you go into a grocery store and a box of cereal is $10. It's crazy.
See, I'm not going to disagree.
I mean, we're getting squeezed.
I agree with you dudes when you say that. I think the real problem with the people that I come across is I think most people have, not wanting to, but have sort of been able to deal with the day-to-day inflation. The thing that kills them is, my new air conditioner is what? 10 grand? They used to be three. The service stuff, where somebody won't come near your house to fix a toilet for less than $300, that kind of stuff. I mean, I think the surprise announcements, the emergency room visit, the new roof, the new windows, those are the shockers you don't even know about. They're just sitting out there.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm so thankful for my training in the Navy. I can fix my vehicles. You know how much it cost me to fix my vehicle? If I didn't know how to do this stuff, it would have probably cost me $3,000 to have some mechanic do what I did for basically the cost of five oil gas cans.
Maybe you'd have walked into somebody and said, all you got to do is hold the pedal to the floor.
Yeah. I mean, think about the people in New York who have radiator systems and gas boilers. They get raped by the service people in New York City. I'm telling you, I lived there for 2 years in my in-law's house. My family did. And I was disgusted by the quality of service homeowners get. The plumbers.
What's the maintenance?
The boilers. It's crazy how bad they get it.
The radiator system is like idiot-proof. Is it? Was it steam or hot water?
Steam.
Oh,
yeah.
Steam. That's different.
The boiler, it puts steam into the radiator, and that steam can only get to the radiator if the air vents allow the air to be vented out. And once the steam gets to the vent closes, and then it warms up the radiator. If you have old vents, and they never replaced the vents, by the way. They replaced the radiator. They charge you $1,500 to, you know, wire a new thermostat for the radiator, but they never change the vents, and those vents are the key. If your radiators can't breathe, then those radiators don't get hot, and the heat's uneven. But man, they get great by
next week. If we got 10 minutes to bore everybody, go through the difference between a steam system and a hot water system.
Oh, I got really good at it, Tom. I actually thought about doing that for a living.
See, now in Chicago, most of it was hot water system, and hot water system was idiot proof.
Yeah,
I mean, they had a two pipe system. You had a one pipe system.
Yeah, one pipe steam system. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
When the steam condenses,
here was all two pipe. It was much easier.
Yeah.
Anyway,
when the steam condenses. Yeah. Oh yeah. So we'll talk about it next week.
Happy New Year, buddy. To you and everybody, the whole gang, and your vehicle, it appears.
Oh, I'm so happy, man. I beat the inflation. I didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, God. SP Futures up 11. What do you mean? You're a 700-hour consultant. How much did it cost you in your own time?
I'm not making $7 an hour. There's no way.
You always got to look at yourself. I'm a 700-hour consultant. I just spent $2,100 fixing this truck. We'll be back.
I'm on break, man. I'm on a month-long Christmas break. So
Greg, thank you. We'll be back Thursday. Stacks and Jacks.